Hello and welcome to BBS Radio. You were just listening to Your DNA Set to Music. Thank you, listening audience, for joining us. I'm your host, Sherry Edwards, for the next hour of Sound Health, where we attempt to bring you information and ideas about self-health. I've been noticing a lot of people are picking up that notion now. We've been talking about self-health on BBS Radio for a couple of years, and I'm seeing it appearing more and more out there. I love the idea. Today on the show, we're going to have Carol Reitberger back with us by popular demand. She is an awesome guest, and we're pleased that she agreed to come back with us for such short notice. She was just here last week, and we were just deluged with mail about the show and how wonderful it was. We will be with her in just a moment. We got a couple of announcements that I'm going to try to keep really, really short because we did not get to complete the show as planned last week. And so if I quit talking, we may make it this time. This show is sponsored by the Sound Health Research Institute. And in May, here in Ohio, we are going to have another open house. We'll be doing free vocal prints for people, giving away computer programs. We'll have speakers, good food, a great time. Just show up. We were surprised at how many people from our BBS audience showed up last year. So we'll have more about that as the weeks go by because it's a couple of months away. Don't forget about the free NanoVoice program, completely free computer program that's available for our listeners, and you can download it at nanovoice.org. There's also a free manual and a free class. Just get in touch with us at class@vocalprofiling.com or call us to sign up for class at 740-689-1119. The next class is on the 16th. We're also running a project on weight management. I have had a weight problem most of my life. My entire family is heavy, and we are doing research here to try to find out how that is genetics and what's really going on with your body, because I read an article about an organization, a hospital really, in Sweden, and they fed people 6,000 calories a day. You really should get about 2 if you're a woman. 2,000 calories a day, and because they fed them the right food based on their body chemistry, the people went to their normal weight. So we're going to try to see if we can do that with sound, and part of it's going to be working with HCG, human chorionic gonadotropin, which is also an anti-aging chemical, and it helps the body use leptin and helps use sugar. We're excited about that project, and we just need some guinea pigs to work on. That's the number, 740-698-9119, that you can call to talk to us about that or any other question you might have. And we'd love to hear from you. Okay, on with this show with Dr. Carol Reitberger. We've had some incredible comments about her being on the show last week. Best show ever was one of them. And another one, Carol exudes feelings of joy and unconditional acceptance. I love her personality books and her healing books. I ran out and bought them all after last week's show. Can you ask her back soon? And so we did. Carol Reitberger is a PhD, a medical intuitive, an innovative leader in the field of personality topology. Her books have received national recognition for their innovative approach to self-help. Her work has been featured on TV, radio, and numerous national magazines. She's the author of 5 books. They're all on helping you become a more authentic person. And besides all that, guys, she is a sparkling personality, very down to earth. Welcome to the show, Carol.
Well, thank you. Boy, I better be really good, huh, Sherry? Thank you, everybody, for all those kind words. You made my heart smile.
people just love the information you provided. And I think it's because people are ready to know themselves, and that's what your book does. And you also give the steps of, okay, know yourself, and if you don't like that, here's how you move over here. Could you recap a bit for our listeners? We started last week with your personality color book, and we're all fascinated with that, of how people can become a personality that you labeled by a color. So would you talk about that book, please?
Oh, absolutely, and thank you for asking. My background, ever since I've been a little girl, I've always been interested in what makes us tick and why we do the things we do. And I come from a family of three, two other siblings, and every Sunday we got to choose something that we wanted to do. And I always wanted to go to the airport and sit and watch people from when I can remember, as young as possible. So that's really where my interest in people started. And then I had an opportunity in my own kind of figuring out who I was trying to be or who I wanted to be and what I wanted to do. I got involved in personality, and that just changed my world. But more importantly, it changed my perception of myself, because I realized that marching to my own drummer really was who I was and just wasn't a dysfunction the way I had thought it was. So what I did is I did 25 years of research around personality, but not so much the type of personality that we get conditioned to be, but the personality that was created by Carl Jung and his theory that we have distinct modes of psychological functioning, meaning we gather information a specific way, we process information a specific way, and we make decisions a specific way. And that never changes from the time we're born neurologically to the time we transition. The only thing that changes is that we expand that to some degree, but any time we get stressed, we go back to our neurology, as I call it. I chose color because it's a non-threatening way to be able to look at not only ourselves but other people, and to be able to realize that truly people aren't trying to make your life miserable like we always think they are. It's just that they see the world differently, and that maybe they're not auditory in their strength, but they're more visual. And if all we do is talk to them and we use words that they can't decode, then it isn't that they're not trying to listen. The reality is the brain doesn't decode it. So that's where I went with personality. But my real love around personality was, again, trying to understand this dynamics between the neurology and the physiology of the body, meaning how does our mind really chemically run our body? And so that's where it went, and it's just an unfolding from one event to the other, and found that anytime we step out of our neurology, it creates fight or flight. The longer we stay in that, the more it wears the body down, and then that wearing down of the body can leave us susceptible to illness. So that was my focus, and then always with the thought in mind, this isn't about necessarily saying, okay, well, you're wrong because you're this personality color, but this is who you are, this is why you don't fit in some situations, why you procrastinate, what causes stress, what can we do to prevent that from occurring so then it wouldn't break down in your body and ultimately maybe surface as an illness. So that's it in a nutshell. What we had talked about last week was, woo, you come into the world with a name and a phone number, and then all of a sudden you find out that your personality color, what do you do with that? I hope that it's just a way for people to, in a lot of ways, like probably selfishly with my own self, is just how do you fall in love with yourself and how do you know yourself? That's the main thing.
Well, it's a wonderful, beautiful, practical book. And from the questions that came back, it sounds like we rushed a lot of people to the bookstore. And you divide people into red, orange, green, and yellow?
Yellow and green. Mm-hmm.
Can you give a summary of each of those colors, and then we want to ask some questions about that, and then transition into your other book that we didn't hardly get to talk about?
Oh, absolutely, and thank you, Sherry. I chose the colors red, orange, yellow, green for a variety of reasons. One is with my undergraduate work in what's called chromology, or the science of color and how it affects the physiology of the body. What I did is I found that those specific colors really do chemically, neurologically, through the hormones, affect the body. So I was curious how personality behavior also was associated with the physiological or chemical reaction in the body around that behavior. So I married those two. And then in 1981, when I came back from my near-death experience and I was able to literally see the human energy system and or the auras, a lot of people call it, and the colors, I found that it's the four lower chakras. It's the first chakra red, the second chakra orange, third chakra yellow, fourth chakra, the heart area. That really is where we carry so much of what we experience in our life. So it was just like putting layers and layers together. The red personality is the personality whose neurology is very black and white. They're specifically left hemisphere in their gathering information. What I mean by that is if they can't see it, hear it, touch it, taste it, smell it, it doesn't exist in their mind, literally. They make decisions logically. Because they're left hemisphere, it's information in, information's processed, broken down into bite-sized pieces. If it's sequential, if it follows a past pattern, decisions are made. They're conservative, they're traditional, they're pragmatic, down-to-earth, black and white. They're the people who measure on results and not on effort. And they're the people who are very traditional in the way they live their world, and they like to be organized, and they like to have some kind of routine and redundancy and structure because it makes it easy for them to be able to get through the day. The orange personality is a personality that neurologically is different, meaning they gather information the same way as a red, see, hear, touch, taste, or smell, but they make decisions based on emotions, or the decision has to feel right. Well, for the orange, for it to make sense and then to feel right can create a lot of confusion chemically in the brain until they can get both sides seeing the same thing the same way, and then chemistry changes. These are the people who are very people-oriented. They really place a lot of value on relationships. Now, not that we all don't, but they live basically by their relationships, meaning if their relationships are good, they feel good. If their relationships are bad, they feel bad. They're the personality that worry. They're the personality that will put other people's emotional needs before their own. I mean, what a wonderful gift to be able to do that. And all they would like is for people to just be happy, everyone get along. They're very social. They're very bonding with people, very cooperative, very considerate, very kind, very gentle people, both male and female. The yellow personality lives in their mind. In fact, most of the time, Sherry, they don't even know they have a body attached to that brain. And they're deep thinkers. They have a lot more complexity. They gather information through their what I call intuition, or looking for patterns, or kind of that ESP or that bigger picture. And then they go over and they say, okay, I get this picture of what it should look like. How can I make sense of it? And so they bounce back and forth from right to left hemisphere. And then they have to come back to left hemisphere to make decisions. And then they have to go to right hemisphere to the emotional part and be sure that the decision feels right. It's logical. They see the picture. It makes sense. And so they form a Z neurologically, and they jump around. They're deep thinkers. They're visionaries. They're problem solvers. They want to solve a problem not only in what's happening now, but what's happening in the future. And in fact, they kind of exude from what I call their energy, this ask me, ask me, ask me. Like if you can have a problem, they'll find it. And they just want to be able to help that way. They love to challenge. And their philosophy in life is let's make anything better. And then there's the green personality. They're the cheerleader. Now, I said the red was mainly left hemisphere. The green is left, right hemisphere. The green looks for patterns. They read nonverbal cues and communication. They really don't listen to the words. They can hear them, but not all words resonate. But they want to know how someone feels. Like an orange, they make decisions emotionally. But what they want is they just want everybody to be happy. They want everybody to get along like the orange does, but they just want to have fun. And they're people that are really the catalyst that bring a lot of people together. Very romantic. They love love. They love loving people. They love everything that they do. And just a different perspective. But everything's, so it has to feel right to make the decision. They're very intuitive, very big picture thinkers. And what they do is they want to see everything. And then they want everything to feel right. So one of the things that your audience may hear, Sherry, there are some crossovers because we all have to fit in this world. But each personality has a very definitive neurology, and that really drives how we think, the words we use to communicate, our behavior, and why we do the things we do and what creates stress. And that's really where my focus was.
And your book, What Color Is Your Personality, has a test in the back, a little question, this is me, this is not me, and then you kind of add them together and see what's going on with it. When people heard this show the day after here at work, everybody wanted to take this test. And we found some strange discrepancies. One of them was in my husband.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody sort of decided up front, they guessed at what personality someone would be after we read them the description. And for the most part, people fit. But my husband just stood out like an absolute sore thumb, that he scored himself A15, yellow 15, orange 19, and green 19.
Mm-hmm.
We all thought he would turn up to be absolutely red. So we took your test and we answered it as if we were answering for him. And in every case, it turned out his score was red. Now, how can we perceive someone to be some way and the people around him every day can see him totally different?
Oh, absolutely. And thank you for that, because that is the interesting part about personality. The assessment itself is straight neurology. It talks to the brain. The words that are in the statements talk to right-left hemisphere. It asks the brain to identify specifically how do you gather, how do you process, how do you make decisions. In the case with your husband, as you had alluded to and also said to me, testing up a yellow. The yellow personality, remember when I had talked just a brief moment ago, that their neurology starts right hemisphere, jumps to left, goes back to right, crosses over back to left, goes back to right, crosses back to left, goes back to right, goes back to left, and forming that Z. And that particular personality, they literally are a square peg trying to fit in a round world. And what they do that I found in my research is as young as 2 and 3 years old, based on their environment and based on the personalities of their parents, even though they don't know personality, the yellow personality will take on another color in order to function. And what I mean by that, to cope, to look like they fit in this world. Because the yellow makes decisions based on logic and the red makes decisions based on logic, it is not uncommon for a yellow to take on red behavior, because that's how they get praised. If they're organized, if they're on time, if they are loyal, if they're dependable, if they follow through on their commitments, all of those are the qualities of the red personality per se. So what that yellow will do is they will take on that red behavior. Then you have to take into the consideration in looking at just kind of our social behavioral conditioning that we have. In the male, a red male, in my work in statistics, again with personality assessment only, the majority of personality as far as statistically colors that show up are reds. And the red male basically is what all males will try to emanate. And the yellow is one who will do that. And they do it very effectively because they make decisions based on logic. So in your husband's case, my sense is, and that's, I'll say it that way, my sense is he took on that red behavior because that's where he got his praise. That's where he was most effective. That's where he was able to jump in and really deal with problems, because the yellow lives to solve problems, truthfully, and to be able to do that. And then yellows also like people to depend on them for answers. So in our personality with that red, we take that color on, the behavior on, the thinking on, the mannerisms of it, and then what we do is then people will see us that way. But somewhere in midlife, I'm not sure where that is, Sherry, all yellows hit a point where they go through an identity crisis. And when that occurs, they don't really even know who they are. And that's where I found with the personality work, whether it's my instrument or the Myers-Briggs or Carl Jung's work, it doesn't really make a lot of difference. As long as the instrument is really self-directed, then what they'll do is they'll discover themselves. And that is such a liberating time and epiphany, because they realize that truly they don't fit. They never have, they never will, and it's okay. but they can also see where their coping personality has caused them to maybe lose a part of themselves. So what your people, long way of saying it, sorry about that one, but what people see and the way we deal with people, we see in people what we want to see in them so they are like us, so they can help us. And this is something I found consistently. And my sense is with your husband, color, coping, emulating what was in the family, also with what is required of him in the business, in the relationships, then that's the color that people would see him. Yellows are very curt. They're very black and white. They're very sharp. They can hurt without even knowing that they're hurting someone in the way that they can answer questions.
I think most people see him as very parental in how he speaks to them. So that's where their idea of red may come in.
Yeah, and but I do need to tell you, that's also a quality of the yellow personality, because a yellow personality prides themselves on being authority. They see themselves as experts, and as a result, there's an arrogance about them, frankly, that they have all the answers, because in their mind, they've done all the homework to do that. So that's something that a yellow has to be very sensitive of, is that we don't come across as that arrogance and be condescending to people. And we get quite a few raps alongside the head before that really comes to our mind and we have to do something with it.
That's a polite way of putting it.
A politically correct way of saying that, yes, we are very arrogant, and yes, we do need those 2x4s every so often to remember that we truly don't have all the answers while we think we do.
For those of you who want to talk to Dr. Reitberger, 877-876-5227, and in Canada, 888-815-9756. The direct number, 530-876-3222. And if you can't remember any of those, go to BBS Radio, right where you're listening to this. Go to Station 1, and those numbers are right there. You can also write to us at radio@vocalprofiling.com. I am monitoring that, and I'm also monitoring sherryonair@gmail.com. They bombed that one today right before the show. I got 3,228 emails, all the same, right before the show. Just happened to catch it. So if you want to talk to Dr. Reitberger, just give us a call. Here is a couple of the questions that have come in, and I try to put them in little categories. In your book, you talk about your out-of-body experience. Did you meet God? Did that experience change your perception of reality, your perception of God?
Boy, I would love to say that I did meet God. In my particular case, I did not. That's not uncommon, as I understand it, not to justify it, but it isn't uncommon in a near death versus, of course, the transition part. What I did is I did touch the other side. I did touch the love. I did touch the surreal part of it. I did touch the part that was very free, very liberating. I was able to see the light, but again, I did not touch God. And then also, I just very honest, I was raised in a very structured religion, and it's one that I still am very connected to. But at the time all this happened, Sherry, I was struggling with my perception of what God was. And one of the things that I realized in a near-death experience, you have about a 4-minute period of time, and you're still very active within your own neurology, and you're very active from the standpoint of what was familiar to you. At that point in time, I can tell you that I probably did touch God to some degree, but I did not see the face of God the way that I believed I would when I died. And I do remember them saying that I have flatlined and that they've lost me. And I was, frankly, when I came back, I was very disappointed that I hadn't. I thought maybe I had not done something right. Yes, my life changed tremendously. One of the things that probably so significant for me personally is that I learned that you don't always, as they told me, color outside the line. When I say they, I actually had some souls come and stay with me. I always thought angels would come. Angels did not come. So again, I got to do a lot of work myself in this process. But what I did find is that it is okay to color outside the lines, that it is okay to be different, it is okay to march to a different drummer, and it is okay to see things different. I also realized that everything that we experience is part of the process of us to grow spiritually and personally, and that anything that we desire is literally ours. All we have to do is ask for it. I also learned that this is not supposed to be about suffering, and that what I mean is life is not about suffering. Yes, there's struggle in any kind of growth and change, but it's not about suffering. But I did, not only did I change emotionally and psychologically, but my sight literally was altered. I'm like a human x-ray machine. I can see an aura like thermography around anything that has atoms and molecules, emotions.
We're going to have to do a whole show about that. One of the realities of that is coming back, for me anyway, coming back and not being able to explain this expansive feeling. There's just no words for it, and like embracing and loving everything and everybody. People think you're crazy.
Oh, boy. And I'll tell you, with my psychology background, coming back and trying to explain to people that I saw color around them, and trying to explain to my family, you know, what it was like. And then people were so curious, what was it like to die, Carol? What was it like to come back? And all I wanted to do was try to figure out how to come back into some kind of normalcy of my life. And I just couldn't do it. And then not to have anybody talk about, I was 37 years old at the time. I go out and buy a box of crayons, Sherry, and create this silhouette. And anybody that would talk to me, I'd sit down and color. I didn't even know what it was. And you're right, it does change you, but it isn't, maybe for some people it was, but it isn't always the most joyful experience because you don't know what to do with it.
And you can't explain it to people.
No.
They just look at your cross eye.
And you can't explain the sense of love that is there. And it makes our human love just a minuscule part of this whole thing, so absolutely.
You get things like, okay, if you really love me, empty out your checking account and give me all your money. I mean, you just get those silly things.
Yeah.
And we have a strange email, and I want to get to it before we transition into Healing Happens with Your Work, with Your Help, which is your next book, because all of this fits together. And this is an email, and he signed, I think it's a he signed it Tower. And this was in response to an email that we sent out about you being back on the show. We were so excited about that. We wanted to share it with everybody, so we sent this out to our email list. And it was just back by popular demand, Dr. Carol Reitberger, blah, blah, blah. And he writes back, "Why would I give my DNA to the world? You talk too much, fat bitch. Identify my communication style." This is an obvious need for attention, so I thought I'd give him some on the show if he's listening. I mean, how would he know I talk too much if he didn't listen? And how would he know I'm a fat bitch if he hasn't seen me?
Again, very sensitive as you are, Sherry. Just what you heard is I was just trying to kind of go in and get permission to basically do this because it's very invasive for us to go into other people's space. So what I'd like to do is, if I may, I will put that energy aside and then share it from kind of a neutral standpoint. Anytime we reach a place in our life where we find it necessary for us to call people names, and I don't mean this derogatory to the listener, but to call people names, that is an indicator that we have something inside that is frustrating. If there's some anger inside, there's some resentment inside that is trying to come out. It needs to come out. In many ways, it's a cry for help. It's a part of us saying, I want to be heard. But there's that emotional part, that deep part that is inside that's festering. And as a medical intuitive, that kind of emotion ultimately can create anything from aches and pains to illness. Now, that's not predicting this person's going to do that. But what I find in this case is this is someone who has something to say and wants to be heard. This is someone who has some frustration inside, some unsettled business or unfinished business inside that needs to come forward. And this is a person who basically, in many ways, as I learned when I was on the other side, they're doing their job, as strange as that may sound. Because when we have someone challenge us, the first thing that we do is we have the chance to go in and really look at ourselves and get in touch with ourselves. And then we can say, okay, this is where I am. This is what I can learn from this and so forth. And that person does a lot of good for us. It's a sacred agreement. And this person has a sacred agreement with others, whoever comes into this person's path, to be able to challenge them to think and to really kind of know themselves. The other part of it is, we share our DNA with everyone energetically, whether we choose to physically or not by procreation. So energetically, the message that is being sent, for those who can vibrationally resonate with it, they will take it in, they will feel it, they will experience it, they will do something with it, whatever that may be, and then that energy will go back to the person that sent it.
I felt like the worst thing that I could do was to ignore this man. He didn't have to respond to me.
Oh, absolutely.
And when people reach out, call you names or call you ugly or whatever, they're asking you to help them.
When they're also giving us the opportunity to go in and really look at ourselves. And, you know, we all want to hear wonderful things and, you know, every one of us do. And it's not that we have to hear the hurtful things, but the hurtful things are the things that cause us to go deep inside and really look at and say, am I okay? Do I have something that I need to work on? Nope, I'm okay. This is another person's thing. It isn't about me. Now, that isn't saying that we're trying to shrug it off, but if we can go inside and we can say, you know what? I'm not that person. Then we become closer to loving ourselves. That's what I learned on the other side.
Well, I try to be very aware this evening, because of his email, to give you more time, because we're here for you as our guest. And so, you know, thanking him, you'll remind me to stay on my diet. You know? But I think he wants to know his communication style. And from the description, he might be a green or an orange.
Absolutely. Absolutely. From the communication style, the words that he used and the way that the words were structured in his sentences, this most likely, and I always, one of the things I also don't do is tell people their color, because that's the greatest gift of all is self-discovery. But I can tell you in the personality, this person, this type of language and sentence structure is most likely a green. There's someone that has been hurt inside that is dealing with some hurt and trying to find a way to bring it forward. And when a green gets frustrated to the point where they start name-calling, they have reached a point, and I always say, when they start using the four-letter word, and that's not love, or they start calling people names, that's a green that I always encourage, go inside, find out what's bugging you, and then figure out a way to get it out.
And your book, What Color Is Your Personality, is so easy to do that with. I would encourage everyone. I mean, it got, what, 5 or 6 stars at Amazon? We talked about that last week, and I don't know if it's still available. There's probably a run on it.
Oh, thank you for that. My What Color Is Your Personality is going to come out in paperback in July, so hopefully it'll be out again, but thank you. And you know, Sherry, you and I have talked. We share so much in similarity as far as what we have to share. So I say to this other person, Sherry has a lot of wisdom inside that we're all listening and learning from. So, Sherry, I don't want you to zip it up, sweetie. I want you to keep talking.
Well, I think I'll write back to this guy and just thank him for
absolutely
writing. And
absolutely. I would encourage that tremendously.
I just don't know what to say to this guy. I don't know what. I think I'm a yellow-green combination. Mm-hmm. But I want to help so much, and sometimes I just don't have the tools. But, you know, just being here.
Yeah. Well, sometimes just acknowledging that someone has been heard. that's what they've been struggling with their entire life is a great gift.
It is, and it's encouragement to stay on my diet, too. Well, let's transition, because they totally go hand in hand. Let's transition to healing happens with your help because you've been able to correlate the personality types with their healing or their illness or what's going on with them. So can you transition us from personality into your new book, Healing Happens?
Oh, thank you. Absolutely. The Healing Happens book is really the culmination of my work as a medical intuitive and then also my background in personality. And what I found is that we tend to hold emotional charges within the body itself, the organs, the glands. Also, we hold emotions in the muscle structure, and then we hold thoughts in the bones, and we hold fears in the spine. So what I did in the book is I talked about what's the real dynamics behind illness. It isn't just that we wake up one day and our body isn't working right. There's a lot of layers to it. It's kind of like layers of an onion. And if we can look at illness from a holistic perspective where we look at everything that could possibly be contributing it, maybe it's an attitude or negative emotion that we carry, or maybe we don't love ourselves, or maybe we're not eating the right things, or we're not exercising, or we're not doing something we love. If we can look at illness from the standpoint of all aspects of it, then we can pick and choose wherever we want to go, wherever we want to start, and we'll all get to the same place, and that's healing. Healing, to me, is making the body better than it was before it became ill. Curing is, and this is what, and I'm not anti-doctor, I said that last show, on the last show, curing is where we just put the body back to, or hope to, back to where it was when it became ill. So in the book, I look at 23 common illnesses from the psychological implications, the emotions associated with it. There are three basic needs that we have. Our soul needs to grow and express itself. Our mind needs to feel in control and secure. And our body needs to feel love and be supported. And I look at each illness and identify if it's a need of the soul, the mind, or the body.
I like that concept that you just want to support optimal form and function.
Absolutely. If you know, it's like you have, when your body hurts, if it gets to the place where you really need to go to a doctor, you will. And that'll take away the symptoms and it'll take away the aches and pains. But my quest has always been to try to understand, why do these things keep reoccurring? And why do, when they recur, do they tend to escalate or to become more pronounced in the body? What can we do to get down to the very cores of all parts of the illness and be able to look at all parts of it and say, okay, so I'm holding grief in my right lung. And grief in the right lung, right breast area, that can be asthma. What can we do to remove the grief? Or they don't even have to do that. Or you can say, okay, asthma is an emotional based illness, you know, what am I angry at? Or they can go in and say, you know, I'm going to take the albuterol and then just be able to deal with the symptoms. Or I'm going to change my diet because asthma can also be an allergic reaction to food. So a lot of different ways to look at it.
There's these wonderful charts in your book that says, okay, ovary is this and lung is that. How did you come to those conclusions?
Lots of research, a lot of wonderful people that came to me for readings that would sit in front of me or talk to me about what was going on in their life, and I found that there were just very consistent patterns of behavior that had patterns of emotion, that had patterns of personality that patterned in the body. And so the book is literally the result of 25 years of research.
So the idea is heal the emotion, and that release heals the body?
If you heal the emotion, it releases the energy charge you have on it and allows the chi or the energy flow that we're designed. It just gets rid of the congestion and blockages. Now, emotions don't really make us sick, but what they do is if we have negative emotions that stay repeated in our behavior or in our thinking, then what they can do is they affect our attitudes. And maybe we're optimistic in one area of our life, but maybe we have three or four that we're really pessimistic. Maybe we're optimistic in the fact that we are very good at what we do in our work, but we don't like ourselves. And so the emotion leads to the attitude that leads to a core theme, and that's kind of our story. You know, every one of us has a story. My story is I'm not smart enough. I mean, I've started that ever since I was a little girl with my dad, and it was reinforced and reinforced, not smart enough. So here I am, two PhDs. Sherry, I color for a living. You know, I mean, it's like, good grief, Carol. You've got masters, you've got PhDs. You make a living as a medical intuitive walking around with crayons. When, Carol, are you going to get beyond not feeling you're smart enough? And that happens to hold in my stomach and my gut. And whenever I get to a place where I've done something I think is stupid, my stomach knots up, my irritable bowel goes crazy, and then it's like, come on, Carol, get a clue. So that's what I try to do is, that's the story. Every one of us has it. Sometimes I can use it as a pity party. It's like, oh, feel sorry for me. And then other times I use it as an inspiration, and then everybody goes, oh, well, if Carol can do it, I can do it. And I'm sitting here thinking, I can't do it.
Well, I think you're very powerful, and you must be very intelligent to make it this easy for the rest of us to grab hold of this and look at it.
Oh, thank you.
I have probably 50 questions, and we only have 10 minutes.
Okay, I'll be short and sweet.
Or we could just save it for next time, because some of these questions are really, really interesting.
Well, let's go ahead. If you want, do you want to go ahead and jump in? And I'll just be short and sweet and not be... See, typical of a yellow, Sherry. Here I go. Typical of a yellow. Somebody says, what time is it? I have to tell them what time, where to buy the watch, all the parts, all the everything. So,
well, I think people who have taken the time to write us deserve everything that they can get from us. So we'll just have you back.
Very good. I'd love that.
Okay, one of them... I'm really interested in this, and this is left over from last week. Can illness be emotionally inherited, like diabetes in a grandmother, mother, and grandchild?
Yes, diabetes can be inherited from the standpoint that it is part of the genetic disposition for it. Emotionally inherited, no. But what can be created is that we can be behaviorally fall into the patterns of our mothers or our grandmother or our from the grandchild. So what it is, yes, there's a genetic predisposition, diabetes. Yes, we create the behavior because there are role models as children. We create the behavior. That behavior creates emotions. Those emotions create a story or a core theme. That core theme can show up in the body. From that standpoint, emotions aren't inherited, but they are part of the process.
Going right along with this, also from last week, how about children born with disease? How is that emotional?
Ooh, this is a tough one for, I've spent a lot of years trying to figure this one out, frankly. I do not believe that we come in, and this is another thing that I have to give that disclaimer that I learned from the other side. We are not born with bad karma. We are born with what I call a to-do list. In that to-do list, we go through our entire life working on it until we reach a place that we move beyond and we put something else on the list. Children that are born with disease that I've actually studied, and I have a granddaughter born with muscular dystrophy, I believe that she wasn't born of muscular dystrophy because she had an emotional unfinished business or bad karma. I believe that she chose that, and I believe that we choose our things to be able to be of service and help to others. This child has taught all of us in our family, as all children with disabilities or challenges do, to really appreciate the small things that are important. When I pick up a fork and she can't, I appreciate it. I believe that they are wonderful healers in their own way, and I believe they come here to help us, not because they've done something that is emotionally wrong or that is from a past life. That's my own personal opinion.
Okay, that's a good answer. Here's another good question. With this model, are you blaming the victim?
Oh, that's an outstanding question and one that I certainly have been asked many, many times, because any time we work with any of the psychological aspects of behavior or illness, there's a natural tendency to think that we're blaming the victim themselves. That's not what this is about, from my standpoint. This is about saying to someone, if you perceive yourself as a victim, what can you do to help yourself? And the answer to that is know as much about your behavior, know as much about your personality. If you make decisions based on emotion, don't try to make them based on logic. It doesn't work. It compromises you. It compromises your body. So if you choose to continue, someone chooses to continue victim behavior, it is serving a purpose, and when it no longer serves a purpose, they will change it. This is not about blaming. It's about offering a different way to see something to be able for a person to participate and heal themselves.
Okay, we're going to stir it a little further here.
Okay.
If a husband demands that his... Yeah, I have to read this right. Is a husband who demands his wife... Who demands? Demeans his wife about her looks and the way she does the dishes... responsible for the illness she develops?
Typical yellow. I'm going to have to answer that yes or no. Yellows have a hard time giving a single answer on these kind of things. So, does the husband contribute to it? Yes. And he contributes to it from the standpoint two things. One is there's an issue within him that it would be positive for him to look at. The other side of it is it affects a person's health because the person who hears that and sees that believes it. And from that standpoint, it hurts us if we allow someone to hurt us. And in the case of this situation, both people, I would encourage to look at the situation, and I would encourage this woman to look in the mirror because I can pick her up energetically, and there's an awful lot of beauty that she has starting out with her smile. And if she could see the beautiful parts of herself, then she would see that it's his own insecurities that are causing him to be this way, and it isn't because she isn't pretty. That's the way that would work.
Is this kind of a yellow married to an orange kind of thing?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, when we talk about opposites, you and I briefly talked about this at some point in time, opposites that attract. That is true. We do. The impetus behind that is if I'm weak in one area, somebody's strong in another, what a great team we'd make. But the bottom line of it is that we can, when opposites attract, once we get into that long-term process, it can be very destructive. A yellow forgets to say, I love you. As far as a yellow is concerned, if they stay in a relationship, they're committed 110% to you. If you need to hear that I love you all the time or to be complimented all the time, as an orange would like to do and be appreciated, as a yellow, I will fail miserably. And it isn't that I'm trying to create her harm or hurt somebody's feelings. Frankly, a yellow just doesn't even think about it, Sherry. Now, that may not sound nice to say, but it's very true. And an orange needs it. And that pairing can create a tremendous amount of hurt on both sides. And ultimately, if that's held inside and not discussed or worked with someone, whether it's talking to a friend or seeking some kind of help, whether it's through the clergy or it's a psychological thing, it will ultimately affect our health.
Wow. What neat insights to take these tests for a couple.
That's
incredible.
Absolutely. And, you know, as far as compatibility, a lot of people say, well, boy, if I made it in my own personality color, wouldn't that be easier, Carol? No. For example, two greens get together. Greens have a very difficult time making a decision because they don't want to hurt each other's feelings. So Saturday morning, two greens wake up, and one says to the other, what do you want to do? The green goes, I don't know. What do you want to do? 5 o'clock on Sunday night, they're still asking what they want to do, and they look at each other and go, well, that went that weekend. Next weekend, you're choosing what to do. We call that personality passing the buck.
I love this stuff. Here's one that's kind of out there, but interesting. Could this emotional thing, could it just be that illness attacks the weakest part of the body, and so you're holding the emotions there, so that's where the illness attacks?
Absolutely. And sales are very, very intuitive. And what will happen, especially I'll use cancer for an example, cancer cells are the formation of, they're the creation of cells that divide, reproduce, and grow too quickly. And they will go to the place that's the weakest part in the body or the part where they get the greatest nourishment. That nourishment can be emotionally, energetically. It can also be through glucose, and it can be by the weakness of the cells surrounding it. So absolutely, illness will always find your weakest spot. And that weakest spot can be done energetically, and it can be done by a repetitive emotional behavior. If you're a victim and you see yourself as a victim and you're hopeless and you're helpless and you see yourself that way, maybe you've been, you know, conditioned that way, then what will happen is that when illness occurs, it will occur in that site, and that will be the first indicator that we have something wrong in the body.
We have a great question about cancer, but we don't have time for it.
We'll come back.
I do have, I think this is an easy question. Lately, I've had a strange weakness, soreness in my elbow, upper forearm, like the brachial radialis. Mm-hmm. It's very sore and tight to the touch. What emotion am I not attending to?
In that particular case, that person is probably dealing with something that's a struggle right now in their life or something that's hard. What they have is they feel like they've got an inflammation of the tendon, but even more importantly, they've got a vertebrae that is out of alignment in C5 and C6 in the cervical part, and that's where the muscular issue is. It's radiating down. That's a plexus there. It's got a nerve and muscle, but it's a chronic inflammation. Basically, they're irritated with themselves.
Ah, you know, the other thing they say here, and one of the things I had an issue with, there's no index in the book. And
yes.
They say that here. You know, they had a hard time. They couldn't find it from any of the charts.
Yes, no, and that was the way the book was written. Publisher, book written, I can't say any more. That's just kind of their guidelines.
So if we write to them and say, we want an index in this book, you think they'll quote?
Well, what I'll do is that I'm going to be doing another book that'll be like a reference guide of the different illnesses. I think we're going to try to get that out in 2011. And if that's the case, it will be indexed. But thank you for the input. I will certainly take that to heart and put that in my notes back to the publisher.
People who have had a stroke, what emotions are they dealing with?
The stroke is a complex thing. There's multiple emotions. The first thing is that the stroke is tied to the liver itself. It's tied primarily to the blood platelets. It's tied to the anger. The liver holds four emotions: anger, guilt, resentment, and shame. And what causes stroke is a person that is angry. And that's the emotion that's behind it. And it literally changes the chemistry and the way that the liver works, and it changes coagulation, and it changes also the cholesterol dynamics. It's a person who's been under a lot of pressure. They just want to explode, and so there's some metaphors there.
We are out of time. That's strange music, isn't it? That's a DNA set to music again. I think it's having a fit and running too fast or something. Carol, it has been an absolute joy.
Well, thank you, Sherry, and thank you all of your listeners for all your questions and your comments. I hope to be back. Thank you.
I have about 30 more questions. We're going to have you back. Let us know your first free date, and we'll have you back.
Thank you very much.
I can't think of enough words to praise what you have brought to the community with your books. I recommend everybody run to Amazon or Borders or Barnes & Noble and buy these two books by Carol Reitberger, Healing Happens With Your Help and What Color Is Your Personality? Thank you for listening.